It is your Tuesday Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Happy to be back for another day. Hope you guys are having a good one out there. Looks like a nice day today. Would have been a nice day for an eclipse in Minnesota today. Unfortunately, we got that on the rainy day. Cannot move an eclipse to a different day. One of the few things these days we do not have control over. We know exactly when it's coming. We got to hope that it's clear outside. A lot of places in the U.S. it was clear, but not in Minnesota. So that was a bummer. I went to see the one in 2017, went down to Nebraska with my family. Wife, we only had two kids then, a three-year-old and a fairly newborn. She was about 9 months old at the time. Very distinct memories of watching the eclipse from a Lincoln Salt Dogs game in Nebraska. It was quite the moment. So if you traveled or if you were at least somewhere where you could see the eclipse on Monday, hope you enjoyed it. And it's quite the experience. And sorry we missed out in Minnesota. Maybe again in 20 years or so we'll have the chance to see another one. Not here to talk about the eclipse, though. We're here to talk about sports. Andrew Kramer from the Star Tribune joins me here in a little bit. Talk Vikings, talk draft. It's a little bit more than 2 weeks till the NFL draft. Lots to get to with that as kind of the jockeying for position, posturing heats up in terms of what are the Vikings going to do? And I think the big question Andrew and I kind of got to towards the end of the segment is, what's the best case scenario for the Vikings? And I think that's interesting. As you think about all the different things that could happen on draft night, all the different trade scenarios, all they might have to get up, all they might have to do to get up in the draft to get whoever they want, whether that's Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, whatever it is, Jaden Daniels, even if they like Jaden Daniels, whatever it is, what's the best case scenario for how that night plays out? So Andrew and I will talk about the different quarterbacks, what they bring to the table, and what the best case scenario might be. Got to get to the NCAA men's national title game, a big get for the Gophers men's hockey team that Royce and I didn't talk about yesterday. First, though, what did I miss? I'm going to spend most of this opening segment talking about the Twins. Was too cloudy for an eclipse in Minnesota. Was not too rainy, though, for them to play last night. Got that game in against the Dodgers. Probably would have been just as well off if the original forecast had held and it had been rainy all day. Twins get just three hits again, lose 4-2. Shohei Ohtani basically outdoes them offensively as a single person. And so now they're 3-5, 0-3 at home. The offense has been in the doldrums pretty much all season. And we need to spend a little time asking why. What's the reason right now? Why 8 games into the season is this just going haywire? Is this just going off the rails from what they had hoped and expected, at least from the offensive point of view? Twins averaging just 2.88 runs per game right now. That is second to last in the major leagues behind the Chicago White Sox. They are just struggling right now to do anything at the plate. Instead of just talking about it, let's get to the bottom of it. Let's try to investigate some of the reasons why. First off, possibility, they just don't have the right approach at the plate, and maybe they were a little bit overconfident in thinking last year's results, where they were hot at the end of the year, the last two and a half months, last year's results would carry over to this year. And they didn't factor in enough natural regression, right, from guys like Edward Julian, guys like Ryan Jeffers, guys like Matt Wallner, guys who were hitting the ball hard, getting a lot of good results at the end of last year, but you didn't have enough body of work to really know what you were getting from those guys. So I think that's a piece of it, right? Like maybe there was not quite enough attention paid to, hey, what if the things we're counting on don't go right, instead of everything that went right will go right again, and we've fixed these things. I think some things have gotten better, obviously, right? Carlos Correa is having a better year. Byron Buxton is healthy, playing the field, which doesn't so much impact his offense, but does make him a more dangerous player, frees up your lineup, things like that. Alex Kirilloff is hitting the ball well. Like they have some guys going well, but some guys just haven't gotten off to the kinds of starts you would think they should have. Now, maybe some of this, too, is just, kind of along with that, Not enough good hitters in the lineup. I mean, if you think about it, like that's certainly a piece of it. Do they not quite have enough? Does the lineup not look dangerous enough? Is it just not not dangerous enough in terms of the number of quality hitters, enough players that are going to scare a pitcher, make a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher work. You just look at the Twins lineup. You don't really get scared. I looked at it yesterday. Now, they loaded up with right-handers at the start of the game because Dodgers were throwing a lefty Paxton in the game. But, you know, the starting lineup yesterday was Manuel Margot, who had a good game, had the only two RBIs, hit a home run, gave them a 2-1 lead with that home run that they couldn't hold on to. But it was Margot, Correa, Jeffers, Buxton, Jose Miranda hitting fifth, Kyle Farmer hitting sixth, Christian Vasquez, Carlos Santana, Austin Martin. That's just not a really scary lineup to me. It's not a lineup that's going to make a pitcher flinch or think twice, even if it's a lefty going against basically an all-righty lineup, a switch hitter or two in there. But that's just not a really, you know, that's not really a scary lineup. It obviously gives them some options off the bench. Wallner, Julian, Kirilloff, Castro all could pinch hit in that game and did to no effect, but just not a really scary lineup, even when there's a better righty lefty mix. Now, some of this could just be a little bit of bad luck and a little bit of early small sample size. Let's hear Rocco Baldelli try to explain it after, again, another poor showing on Monday.
You know, we could swing the bats better. The at-bats could actually be better, but you know, even when you do swing the bat and hit the, you know, barrel one up, feels like more of the ones that we barrel up are, they're going for outs right now. And, you know, you still have to continue to adjust and find ways and attack your plan when you go up to the plate and try to do a good job. Like, that's it. But, we barreled a few up today right at some people.
Now, I think there is something to this. I think he's right in saying they could be taking better at-bats. I think there's definitely something to that. But I think there is also an element of a little bit of bad luck that should smooth out as the season goes along. Right now, the Twins are hitting .240. Batting average balls in play is .240. That is third from the bottom in the major leagues, but their hard hit rate is 14th. So they're kind of middle of the pack in terms of the number of balls they're hitting hard this year, but they are, you know, third from the bottom in terms of what their batting average is when they put the balls in play. Doesn't count strikeouts, things like that. This is a really good kind of isolator of luck and things like that. When you hit the ball hard, you should expect a lot of the times the balls are going to fall in. They've certainly had cases like that. I think the first home game of the year, the home opener, you know, Cleveland had a bunch of soft contact that fell in. The Twins had a bunch of hard contact that didn't. They lose that game 4-2. That's a good example of a game where they probably deserved a better outcome based on how hard they're hitting the ball. Now, you can't just, that's not the end-all be-all, but it served them pretty well last year. They were, sixth in hard hit percentage and 10th in batting average and balls in play. So those two things, as the season goes along, should correlate a little bit more strongly in terms of, you know, one factoring into the other. So if they're a middle of the pack team in hard hit percentage, they should eventually become more of a middle of the pack team in batting average on balls in play, which should move them more into a middle of the pack team in runs scored per game. So watch for that. It's only 8 games into the season. These things will smooth themselves out. So I think you do have to give them some grace in that category. I do think that is factoring in. Now, last thing, is it just as simple as Royce Lewis isn't in the lineup? The lineup gets a lot more dangerous when he's in there. They have been terrible with runners in scoring position. Royce Lewis is a grand slam, clutch hitting machine. He makes your lineup more scary. He gives you a better approach overall. He just kind of ignites a certain production and enthusiasm. When he went out in the first game of the year, after hitting a home run and a single, a game they won that year, it left a giant hole in the lineup. And I think they knew they would miss him. I don't know if they knew exactly how much they would miss him. And they have to figure out a way to stay afloat, to get more guys going until he gets back. Because it's probably not going to be, you know, until late May, early June. I mean, I know he says he feels a lot better already. They're not going to rush him back. They don't want this to be a recurring thing. They want him healthy for the final four and a half months of the season and hopefully the postseason. Although right now, this doesn't look like a playoff team. And again, 8 games in, a lot of negatives piling up, more injuries to the rotation. Like a lot of the stories, a lot of the headlines I see right now are, you know, injuries to the rotation. The payroll is down and that's having an impact. Things like that. Like a lot of negativity right now around this team. Can they sustain some positive momentum? Can they get themselves to the point now where they're not falling so far behind in these first 2 months that when Royce Lewis hopefully and eventually comes back strong, they can be in a position to then kind of take off from there? So maybe this is, you know, all or a lot driven by Royce Lewis. I think it's a lot of these things. I think it's maybe a little bit of approach, confidence to this lineup going into the season that was unearned. I think it's a little bit of bad luck. I think it's a little bit of Royce Lewis, things like that. So we will see what it was eventually and if they can get it straightened out.
Open a 5.15% annual percentage yield 9-month certificate from Royal Credit Union. Open now at rcu.org/certificate515. Early withdrawal penalties could reduce earnings and principal. APY accurate as of 4/26/24. Insured by NCUA.
Let's bring in Vikings writer Andrew Kramer right now to talk Vikings and draft. It's getting closer, Andrew, a little over 2 weeks away now. The posturing, the kind of mock draft season is in full effect. We don't imagine much will break loose until draft night, right? Like, you figure any final trade that's going to get made, if the Vikings are able to execute one more trade to move up, probably would be a draft night scenario. So talking about it right now feels like a little bit of like, hey, like, there's only so much you can talk about, but it keeps getting interesting, Andrew, in the sense of kind of thinking about the cost, thinking about who they really like, things like that. So I wanted to have you on to kind of give us kind of the lay of the land of how you see the draft and the quarterback conversation shaping up right now.
Yeah, as far as timing, this is truly the doldrums of the offseason. You know, we get it right into it in January, February, the excitement of free agency and the draft coming up. And then everything kind of happens where the rosters settle, the decisions have been made by teams, the major decisions, and even the Vikings making the move to acquire the second first round pick from the Houston Texans was clearly done from Houston's side of things so they can have more draft ammunition to go get Stephon Diggs. So that was a precursor to a move that they wanted to make. And the Vikings need a dancing partner if they want to make another move, which is going to be the fascinating thing of who is going to be willing to make that trade. Is it going to be just Monty Austin Fort, the Minnesota native, running the Arizona Cardinals at number 4 overall, which would be less exciting for Vikings fans? Or could it be a top 3 pick with the New England Patriots at number 3, or maybe even Washington at number 2? You know, the issue being those teams obviously need quarterbacks. The reporting from New England's side of things is they're going to want a king's ransom for the number 3 pick, especially if they have to drop back to number 11 overall, where the Vikings currently sit. Even with 11 and 23, the Vikings could package with another first round pick in next year's draft, 2025. So it's quite the haul the Vikings could offer, but you wonder if New England is even willing to move, or if Washington at number 2 is even willing to move. The Vikings might be doing all this homework on later options like J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, if it's not going to be a Drake May or Jaden Daniels, which Jaden Daniels being the recent Heisman winner, pie in the sky option. Same with May, who's got just all the talent in the world. So, yeah, Mike, I don't think a lot's going to happen until draft night, or at least draft week, because of everything we just laid out. And it's just a matter of, will one of these teams be willing to dance with the Vikings to allow them to get their next franchise quarterback?
Well, let's talk about that posturing a little bit, because like you said, the reporting out of New England is, hey, maybe it even takes more than just these two first round picks and next year's first. Maybe more than that for the Vikings to move up from 11 to 3. Now, again, it's, you know, this is posturing season, but that does underscore the sort of predicament they're in when they need a quarterback. They have signaled to the world that they intend to try to move up to get a quarterback, but then everybody knows that, so they can kind of leverage that to get as much as possible from them. Where should the line in the sand be if there even is a move to be made and things like that? And like, what do you believe is kind of the route to really get into the top 3? Where would you stop if you were trying to get that number 3 pick from New England?
And that's the fascinating thing that only truly the Vikings and their talent evaluators, Kevin O'Connell, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, Grant Udinski, Josh McCown, the quarterbacks, coaches, the people who are going on all these trips, who are doing the private workouts at the universities with these prospects, who are going to be at the facility later on this month as they host their pre-draft visits, as they do early on in April. Those are the people who can decide whether or not their grade is going to be high enough that, yes, you should offer this much to go get the next guy. All these guys are have pockmarks on them. They all have weaknesses. They all have things that you need to work on and develop. And so it's on the coach. It's on O'Connell, who's leading this, honestly, in terms of the quarterback evaluation, to determine, no, Drake May, to me, is a spotless prospect. All these things that are wrong with him, I can coach up. I can change. And it's whether or not they can come to some conclusion and a consensus within the building of, yes, he is worth more than three first round picks for us to go up. Because truthfully, and they know this behind closed doors because we've heard them say it, even on and off the record, it doesn't matter how much you give up if you get it right. Nobody cares how much it cost for the Chiefs to move up to get Patrick Mahomes. No one talks about, oh, it was X amount of first round picks for them to make that move up to 12th overall or wherever he fell in that draft. No one cares what it was because you got it right. We only care about what the Niners gave up for Trey Lance because they got it wrong. If they would have got that right, no one would have cared. And so that's the thing, is that if they evaluate these guys at that level, when you say, where is the line in the sand, it really is determined on what their evaluation is of these guys. And we know enough to know that they really, really like Drake May. It makes sense for them to like J.J. McCarthy, but I actually don't know that. I haven't heard that directly from people at TCO. So if they really love May as much as it seems like they do when talking to people throughout this past calendar year about him and Caleb Williams, I wouldn't be too shocked to see them make that kind of a leap up. It's just a matter of them waiting out that posturing by New England or by Washington or whoever the trade partner is. Because if you get to the week of and New England's suddenly looking at it and the Vikings don't budge on their offer and it's still the best offer, and maybe they are inclined to take it. And this has all just been posturing. So that is the dance that's going on between these teams. And it is going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. And it's going to say a lot about how the Vikings internally viewed these quarterbacks if we don't see them make that move. And New England says, you know what, we actually never even got the offer of three first round picks. Well, then the Vikings maybe didn't view this right. Quarterback draft is so top heavy. Maybe they liked J.J. McCarthy just as much. It's all a matter of how they view those guys and then how they view them grouped together in those tiers.
You did some capsule looks at all five of the quarterbacks who could be available to them based on either just staying at one of their draft spots or moving up. I want to get to that in a little bit, just kind of the strengths and weaknesses of all the guys we're talking about. But you also wrote more extensively a week or two ago about Drake May and just the connections to the Vikings, Josh McCown, just like how much of a relationship those guys have already. And interestingly, how McCown was added to the staff not that long ago. Like, what did you learn from that reporting and kind of thinking about those relationships that already exist between Josh McCown and Drake May?
Yeah, what I knew is that Kevin O'Connell liked Drake May before they ever hired Josh McCown, which makes this all the more fascinating. It's not like they brought in Josh McCown and he talked them into like, hey, I coach this kid in high school. He's a top prospect. This is somebody we should really pay attention to. And Drake May is going to get talked about more in connection with the Vikings because of McCown. They might have just as high of an evaluation of Jaden Daniels, and we're not talking about it because there isn't that coaching connection to just draw these stories from the past to go talk to the people that we did, talking to former high school teammates, including Denny Thompson, who was a quarterback with Drake May under Josh McCown, talking about those two working together and how he felt like Drake May really Josh McCown rubbed off on Drake May as in terms of the leadership style and something that a typical high school coach, who I also talked to in Scott Chadwick, who said, I can't do that for the quarterback. That is the inherent bond that Josh and Drake had is something that's real. It exists to this day. Josh was at Drake's pro day at UNC late last month in March. And he was one of the first guys, according to people there, to talk to Drake. So they have a very close relationship. They met at the combine as well in Indianapolis right after Josh got hired by the Vikings. So all these things combined leads you to believe that if, from what I can hear, Josh has nothing but great things to say about Drake. I have not talked to Josh about Drake on the record, but from everything you pick up, they have a great relationship and the review and eval from the Viking side of things is great. And if they already liked him beforehand, it leads me to believe that this is not just smoke connecting these two. This is not just pre-draft chatter of like, oh, you know, they really might like him. Like, no, this is like a legitimate thing. They think he's got all the talent in the world to potentially lead this franchise further. It's just a matter of yeah, Mike, you talk about that line. Is he going to be that kind of can't miss prospect, or is it going to be, are they going to have enough questions about him where they say, you know what, we can't basically mortgage the entire future of our franchise, which is 3, 4, maybe first round picks, whatever New England wants, to go up and get him. But hearing about the time they spent together, which was the entire 2019 season, it's a fascinating story that ESPN actually did a good story on the Eagles beat reporter, because Josh was a backup quarterback for the Eagles right at the time while coaching high school football. And he never missed Josh, never missed a Monday practice, which was their installs in Charlotte. And he never missed a Friday game with Drake May. Drake May threw 50 touchdowns to 2 interceptions that season. It was his last season of high school football because of the 2020 pandemic. It is what everybody goes back to in terms of him playing his best football that made him a coveted recruit by Alabama before he flipped to go to UNC. So this is a 4-star kid who a lot of people talk about, like a 5-star prospect, and somebody who played really great at UNC with okay talent, I think, around him at times. So I believe in all the connection stuff in terms of when we talk to people in Drake May's background, in Josh's background about those two. And that makes for quite the fascinating storyline when we talk about if Drake falls to 3 or even 4, how aggressive the Vikings will be to go get up.
Let's say New England doesn't budge, or let's say that their trade parameters are just unrealistic. They keep moving the line and Vikings are just like, finally, okay, no. And the Patriots, you know, the quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. It's Caleb Williams, then Jaden Daniels, then Drake May. What then do you think the Vikings turn to next? Is it JJ McCarthy? Is that a trade up? Is that a wait until 11 and hope he's there? And if he's not, maybe take one of those other guys at 23. Like, what do you think their strategy is if the Drake May move proves impossible or untenable?
This is where their evaluation of the next tier becomes critically important. As the time they spent with JJ McCarthy in Indianapolis, the Michigan national champion winner, at his as pro day at Michigan, in a private workout, is it that different from Michael Penix, whose questions about him are more medical? Michael Penix was incredibly good at Washington, but he also had obviously good receivers as well, and a good system that helped kind of set him up. But his arm talent is incredible. But he's not mobile because he's had 2 ACL surgeries. He's also had shoulder issues as well. And so if the Vikings view those guys on similar planes, but they see JJ getting kind of gassed up to this point of like, is he going to be a top 5 pick? It might be worth them waiting on to the 23rd pick, or thinking, you know what, we'll wait past our 11th pick, either trade back farther from there to pick up more, or trade up from 23 if we're worried about missing out on the next guy, if they wait on JJ, or if they wait on Penix or Bo Nix from Oregon and Auburn is the other guy that gets talked about in this group of potential first round quarterbacks. That evaluation that they have of all those guys in that next tier is going to be critically important, because if they don't think that, if they think there's a huge drop off after JJ, if they think he's like the clear number 2, then yeah, you're going to have to either trade up for JJ to number 4 overall with the Cardinals, or 6 overall. I can't remember who that is. The Broncos maybe, or
the Seahawks. Giants have 6, right?
Oh, Seahawks. Sorry. New York Giants. That's right. And they're quarterback needy as well. So you might need to get ahead of them and go
to. They're talking about 5 with the Chargers might be the spot too.
Okay. So that's what I was thinking of. So I knew there was somebody else in there, and that's the spot where, like, if you need to get up to 4 or 5, because you're so worried about that drop off, that's where their evaluation is going to come into play. And really, you're not going to hear the truth about their evaluations holistically until after the draft. And even then, it's going to take some time, because it's going to be whoever they got is the guy they always wanted. And then you hear, well, no, it was really so-and-so above so-and-so. So this, you know, right now, whoever they've got, that how they got that pecking order, if it goes top 3, if they think Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, those are the top 3. And then we think these next 3, JJ, Michael Penix, and Bo Nix, if they think those 3 are close together, it might make sense to wait. And then if you ask, what do they do then? There's so many holes. You could start corner. You could probably go edge there at number 11. Edge was the popular one before they made this pick to acquire 23 overall and got everybody thinking that, yeah, they're definitely going to trade up. Dallas Turner out of Alabama, Jared Verse, who often gets mocked in that area out of Florida State. There are some very good edge rusher talents that could help you replace Danielle Hunter there as well.
Bo Nix is interesting to me because you don't hear a lot of Bo Nix to the Vikings, even though like I don't know a ton about his game. I've read more about it than I've actually like looked at it, but it seems at least on paper to be a decent match. Seems like a guy who's pretty accurate, gets the ball out pretty quick, has got some athleticism. Maybe let's start there and kind of move our way back up as you kind of think about all the draft evaluators you've talked to, you know, whether it was at the combine or wherever it was, like what do these five guys who might be available kind of bring to the table separately as, you know, as potential fits or non-fits with the Vikings?
Yeah, Bo Nix is somebody that gets talked about as an incredibly smart guy who could run and have the footwork to run potential play action systems in the NFL. But there were enough questions about when you read, and this isn't my evaluation because I don't do those things, but when you talk to people and read other scouting reports, whether it's NFL media or ESPN, or you can even go even deeper. There are a lot of guys who do a lot of great work from the scouting academy who go out and put these evaluations out there. And if you take all that in, Bo Nix gets questioned about the systems that he ran. So he ran at Auburn, he ran a lot of screen passes. He ran a lot of quick throws, one read type throws, where it does not require you to process a lot. And then he went to Oregon, and a lot of people felt like he answered some of those questions, but maybe not enough. Certainly as other quarterbacks like Drake May or Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniel, like guys who have really kind of shown, even McCarthy shown, as Kevin O'Connell likes to talk about, on third downs, on gotta have it downs at Michigan, where they didn't ask him to do a lot entirely, but on passing downs, he really kind of showed he can progress through and make those kind of throws and reads. People felt like they didn't see that enough from Bo Nix at Oregon, and certainly not at Auburn, where he transferred from. So there's enough questions about his long-term game, and he's older. And it's the same with Michael Penix, these transfers. COVID year guys who had the extra year of eligibility and guys who can now transfer are extending their careers because they're not wanting to be one and dones at their new schools. So Penix spent 2 years at Washington. Bo Nix spent 2 years at Oregon. And those guys both answered some questions that are making them first-round prospects here, but in a really crowded quarterback group that's thought to be a really deep, great quarterback class, they are not, there's enough questions about their games where they're not ascending to that point. And frankly, Penix, when you talk to people, Penix seems to be the most talented of these second tier quarterbacks. Penix has the arm talent that's equivalent that people, the most interesting comp I've heard for him is Sam Bradford. Okay. Because of the injury history, but also because of the arm talent. He was a guy that was mobile in Indiana before he got hurt, and he showed off a little bit of the speed at his pro day, but you wonder how accurate those numbers are off the 40. But he didn't run a lot at Washington. He threw the ball away a lot, which actually is a plus when you talk to some scouts who say this guy knows when to get rid of the ball, which is a good thing that young quarterbacks don't often do, like Justin Fields, even Bryce Young a little bit last year. And so Penix has maybe more of a pro-ready game, but you wonder, can he last 10 years? And if you're taking a guy in the first round, you better not have questions about his health lasting you that long, because you are going to take hits, especially if you are a pocket passer, as Michael Penix projects to be. J.J. McCarthy's the Alex Smith type, where he's just diminutive, he's small. You wonder if he's maximized his frame and everything he can do. But then you hear Daniel Jeremiah at NFL Network say everything he does is smooth. He processes quickly. He steps through his footwork quickly. He's always accurate and consistent and right. And that's the kind of stuff that screams Kevin O'Connell. It screams West Coast system. It screams kind of what the Vikings like, which is why all these draft analysts are connecting him to the Vikings. And it makes you wonder, like we've talked about, if picks 1 through 3 are not available, are they going to put everything on the table for number 4 and for J.J. McCarthy? And like we just talked about, though, too, if they don't think he's that much better than Penix and Bo Nix, maybe it's not worth doing that.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
It's going to be fascinating. A couple more thoughts really quick. I mean, like you said, they have a lot of other needs. So you can't like just you can't give away like all of the future. I get that you might feel a certain way about a quarterback, and maybe that quarterback is Drake May, but I do feel like they've got to draw a line somewhere, and I don't know where that line is. That's fascinating. I know what you said earlier. It rings true. Like, if they get it right, nobody's going to remember it. But if they give up a ton and get it wrong, like if they give up more than the 49ers gave up to get Trey Lance to move from 12 to 3, I believe that was, with the 49ers, this is even slightly better, although I think what the 49ers were giving up were the 11 or the 12 and then two future first rounders, right? So you didn't know what those were going to be. You already know what the other first rounder is, 23, and then you don't know what it's going to be next year. But, you know, you had a feeling the 49ers were going to be pretty good, that those future firsts weren't going to be, you know, top 10 picks. So feels like if you give up more than that and miss, wow, like you better be as close to sure as possible about this.
The point is that you're fired anyway. If you miss, let's say you got a great deal on Drake May, but he ends up being Zach Wilson.
Yeah. Oh.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it didn't matter if it was a great deal. Then guess what? The next guy who took over for you was better set up. Congratulations. You didn't give up as much. But if you give up the house, then you are not wasting your resources. You're wasting the next guy's resources anyway. So, and that's the thought that these guys are well aware inside these buildings. The pressure is so immense to win in the NFL, and it's so immense to get this decision right. This is such a huge draft, obviously, for them. They obviously know that. And so it's just that fine dance of like, is New England, for instance, at number three, truly posturing and not wanting to give up for, as the reporting is from Tom Curran at NBC Boston over there, he reported that the New England might want more than three first round picks from Minnesota. Well, is that true, or is that just posturing because we're 2 weeks away?
Right.
And because we're 2 weeks away and you got 2 weeks to stew and think about it, and maybe you're going to come back to me with a better offer in 2 weeks when it's Tuesday of draft week and we only have 48 hours to go. So that's going to be the thing of the posturing of, you know, are they going to give up enough? Who is it going to be for? And then, yeah, if they get it wrong, it doesn't matter because you're probably getting fired anyway.
To me, the best case scenario is they're able to move up in a fair trade to number three. That to me is the best case scenario, that you give up what's fair, you do what you have to do, you don't get absolutely like run to the cleaners because everybody needs to know, you knows you need a quarterback, you hold firm at least enough to get a what you consider a fair deal, and you take your shot there. What do you consider to be, you know, best case scenario, second best? Do you have a thought in your mind of what the best case scenario is for the Vikings?
Yeah, and I would just say that evaluators have enough questions about Jaden Daniels, who's the other gettable guy in this range. And maybe Washington at number two takes Drake May and the Vikings don't like Daniels and this is all moot and they're moving up to four and they don't even consider number three. But to me, the best case scenario would be that their guy that they like, if let's say it's Drake May, he falls to a range that then you can get that doable deal, whether it's he falls to three, maybe he even falls to four. If he falls and becomes one of those guys that for some reason just slips in the draft, we've seen it with Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson was so good at Clemson. Like, forget all the off the field stuff. We're just talking just football. He was so good at Clemson, but he fell. Patrick Mahomes had enough questions about him at Texas Tech. There was a lot of more reasons why he fell, I think. And maybe NFL teams knew some behind the scenes stuff that we didn't about Watson. But point being, guys can fall for legitimate and non-legitimate reasons. And if Drake May were to fall, that's the best case scenario for the Vikings, where you pounce to a more reasonable range where it doesn't cost you as much. Let's say it is number four to Arizona, a team that isn't going to be holding you at ransom maybe as much as New England might. And then you can jump up and get your guy because you saw something that everybody else didn't. And that's where these teams win. That's when Buffalo wins with Josh Allen, because he fell to seven because they saw something. Kansas City and obviously with Houston for a little bit with Deshaun. So if you can find your guy and see something that other teams don't, you need some luck for that to happen, obviously, but I think that would be the best case scenario for them.
We'll see how it all plays out. We'll know soon enough, although it doesn't feel like soon enough right now. Andrew Kramer, appreciate it as always. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks.
Really good stuff from Andrew. I'm going to write a little bit more today about best case scenario for the Vikings. I like Andrew's thought process on what if one of those quarterbacks, especially Drake May, starts to slide, and you can kind of see a natural progression of, if that team doesn't take him, that team doesn't take him, where is he going to get taken? And obviously these teams kind of know the intel on what everybody else is going to do. I wouldn't bank on that, obviously, if I was the Vikings, but interesting to think about best case scenarios in terms of trades, In terms of what if a player starts to slide down a board like Mac Jones did a couple years ago, like Aaron Rodgers did many years ago when he was talked about as maybe a first overall pick and then wound up deep in the first round. Things like that. Like, guys can undergo weird kind of slides if you get past a certain point and teams don't need a quarterback anymore and no one's jumping up to grab one because they know everybody else doesn't need a quarterback. That could happen. I just feel like there's too many quarterback needy teams above the Vikings or around where the Vikings pick to think that's going to happen. If someone starts to slide, someone else is going to jump up and pounce on that opportunity to take a quarterback, especially when the leverage might be a little bit better. But again, a couple more weeks before we will know that for sure. Lots to talk about in the meantime. Let's put two things in the cooler. Men's basketball championship game Monday night. UConn repeats as national champs. I would say in an era of transfers, player movement, everything like that, keeping a team intact to a degree and winning a second straight NCAA tournament championship. First time that's happened in the men's game since, you know, the mid-2000s. I would say that is an extra impressive feat. UConn just rolled through this thing. You know, the game was competitive against Purdue, but, you know, you could tell by the end who was clearly the best team. And that was basically the whole tournament. They won by an average. I think their average margin of victory during this tournament run was like 13 points. Like, they are just that good over the course of, you know, over the course of all of these tournament games. It's just an impressive thing to me to watch. And, you know, good congratulations to UConn. You know, the more things change in this modern college basketball era at UConn, the more they stay the same. Now, final thing, Gopher men's hockey. We complain a lot about the transfer portal around here because of a lot of the players the Gophers have lost in other sports. In hockey, they got a really good one, maybe the best portal candidate, Matthew Wood, 2023 first-round pick. Played his first two seasons at Connecticut. He is transferring to the Gophers. The Star Tribune has reported this week. He was getting interest from a lot of top programs, North Dakota, Michigan. He was, you know, he's very high up in the central scouting rating, 6'4", 196 pounds, had two really good years at Connecticut, so could factor in heavily for the Gophers next season on a very good line. We will see about that. But that's a big get for Bob Motzko and his team. And hey, the transfer portal works both ways. Sometimes it's nice to get one instead of losing one if you are the Gophers. That will do it for me today. Bunch of good stuff coming up the rest of the week. Jim Suhan expected to join me on tomorrow's show to talk golf. He is out at the Masters. Set that up. Randy Johnson expected to join me later this week to set up the Frozen Four. Yes, that is in St. Paul this year. No Minnesota teams, no Gophers, but still plenty to talk about with that. And I will certainly pick his brain a little bit more on the Gophers roster going forward as well. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Back at it again tomorrow.